Hey everyone, Ben Cooper Radio, episode number 288. Now, today, there is a twist. There is a twist and a turn. Do you know what? In love, actually, there's a lot of twists and turns, and that is kind of the topic of today. Now, some people often ask me what my current reading is, what my current interest is, and one of them is relationships. Now, I'm not seeking a relationship, I'm in a relationship, but having been in a relationship for a while, it makes me very interested in it. And it also makes me interested in it from a fitness perspective, because I see a lot of friction between people in relationships. Someone's maybe trying to be healthy, someone's trying to hold back that person's health, or maybe there's friction between the habits, maybe there's a different value proposition between these two people. And I've really watched my own relationship evolve over the years and how things have changed and become, you know, better as we've become more honest. We've realized what both individuals want out of the relationship and what fitness means to us. So I had to get a guest on the show to speak with us today. And the guest is Susan Winter. Susan, hello.
Hello, Ben. How are you? This is a great topic. For anybody that lives a healthy lifestyle, the partner you choose has to be in alignment with what you're doing, or it's going to be a lot of problems moving forward.
It is, and you've kind of hit on my first question before
Sorry.
Before I've introed you. I need to give you an opportunity. Susan, tell the listeners who you are, what's the background, what got you so interested in relationships?
Oh, this was by accident. I came from broadcast television. I had my own financial news show on what is now CNBC. It was called Financial News Network. And I had an age-appropriate boyfriend, pro bodybuilder, that I lived with. And we lived together for 10 years. And then I ended that relationship. And I moved out of the dangerous New York City at that time. And I built a country home on a golf course to just get away. What I didn't plan on, the fact was, I was 36, I was semi-retired, and I'd be in a rural community where there were no single guys. And within a year or two, I met a guy in my gym, gorgeous young man. I thought he was 26, 27. I dated younger guys during this time. No, he turned out to be 20 years younger. Ben, I flipped from 39 to 40. He flipped from 18 to 19. Basically, the next 7 years, all hell broke loose in this little community. So I started to think of the victimization I'd gone through, and I thought, okay, it's all about age discrimination. If they could have nailed me to the cross, they would have. And I thought, it's so painful and so horrible, people's judgment of an external being different. It could have been interracial couple at another time period. It could have been same-sex couple, but I was older and he was younger. I wrote a book, Older Women, Younger Men, New Options for Love and Romance. I was a first-time writer, didn't know I could write. It became an international bestseller. So all I did Oprah, I thought it was normal. You write a book, no publicist, didn't have a website for another 8 years, didn't even know what I was doing, knew what I wanted to talk about. And between New York Times and London Times, oh my God, it was like, I thought it was normal. Every day you give 3 or 4 interviews and you're running to CNN. I thought this was normal. Well, I didn't know what I'd done. And then when I felt like I'd given my message, I'm like, okay, I'm done. And I looked at modern dating. And I thought, oh my God, wait, I got more to say. And I entered this profession just like a free resource. I wasn't going to charge for it. I wasn't a therapist. But I realized, you know, life will sometimes take you to where you're really good. You weren't planning on it, but it's like that. These twists and turns took me to where I need to be. So I have an active business. I do a lot of consultation. I do a lot of YouTube. I backed off on the writing. I write for Huffington Post and Good Men Project. And I backed off on that. Now I do 2 videos a week. A lot of consultation, a lot of media interviews like yours. Try to teach people how to have a healthy romantic life and be confident and whole and complete within themselves. And that's how I'm here.
I love that. A career that came by accident, but you're passionate about it. So before we get into relationships, and I don't know, this might be really hard to define, I don't know. And I think people assume they know, but what does a loving relationship actually look like?
Loving relationships have friction, Ben. A loving relationship is not a relationship where you never bicker, fight, or have a small battle. A loving relationship means you have challenges. It means you're growing as a couple, and you're not always going to see eye to eye. But at the end of the day, there's more love than there is resentment. Mm. There's more willing to compromise and come to an agreement than there is a stalemate. That's a healthy, loving relationship. You want two individuals that both have the right to have an opinion, and now they're going to forge their life together. So this is a lot of the clients that I deal with. Don't look for a relationship with no friction. Guarantee it, that means there's no passion.
So, okay, well, friction's one thing, right? But, like, traditionally when I think of a relationship and I see friction, we often then think of almost like explosion. Like, you've seen it in public, right? The couple are having a bit of an argument and it just goes off on one and they start raising their voices and it never achieves anything. Like, so with friction, what is almost the path to resolving that friction in a kind of, I'm going to say a normal way, because the way I've started to really think about this with my relationship is I try and be as humanly upfront as possible the moment I have that emotion. And sometimes that's really difficult because you're not 100% sure whether you should verbalize it, whether it's strong enough. But, you know, I'll say to my other half, I'll be like, do you know what? I'm feeling like this and I'm not 100% sure why, but I need you to be aware of this. Like, how does that affect things? What does it change?
No, that's basically perfect. You're done. Yeah, I mean, you don't need me, okay? So we can just ramble now. You just tell your listeners whatever you want, because you got it. That's the point. So I want to clarify this. I didn't mean that a relationship with friction is what we're looking for. What I meant to do is override this notion that we get that you never have a conflict with your partner. You know, you're two real people. But you get along more than you don't get along. And when you have a little bump in the road, you work your way through it, you hold hands again. Now, as far as what you're doing, you're talking about the difference between responding as an adult and what you see in people that don't do that, that simply react. They name call, it escalates. That's not productive, and you're right. It doesn't go anywhere, and it doesn't solve anything. It creates a fight, and they get, you know, polarized. They get away from each other. What you're doing is correct. You may not know exactly how to process it. You're taking the first piece of information. I have a feeling. I don't feel right about this. I'm not sure where it's going. This is what I need to tell you. And you're doing a technique that I call putting it on the table, which means you're saying to your partner, this is my information. Let's look at this. You see how empowering that is? You're asking your partner to interact with you. It's like you're at work and you've got a work challenge. Hey, let's collaborate on this. Like, here it is. What do you think? That is perfect. That's what we're striving for. And the fact that you're able to do this means somehow over the years you have refined this methodology with your partner to whenever there's an upset, we get it resolved. We move forward with honesty. We work through it. That's why it's been so successful.
Do you think a big problem there with people being able to do that is kind of people are scared of being vulnerable, especially men?
Yeah, I have a twist on this.
Okay.
I hate the word vulnerable, and I would ask nobody to use it again. I like the word direct. Direct. I am communicating information. That's a direct, I feel this. That's not vulnerable. It's a fact. The sky is blue today. Well, it's New York. It's a little gray. Okay? I'm wearing a burgundy dress. That's a fact. So if you quit thinking of vulnerable and simply think of relaying information, you'll do it with a lot greater ease.
So at that point in time, though, that the person that's sort of wanting to do this will feel vulnerable. So to me, vulnerability is the emotion, whereas surely direct is the actual approach that that individual is taking.
Oh, I think that's interesting that you've attached the two together.
Okay.
That may be a male understanding that to communicate honestly, to say what I'm feeling at all, is vulnerable. That's a social construct that you've adopted. Mm-hmm. It isn't necessarily a fact. Mm-hmm. It is simply a layer of context that you put on top of giving information as being a man from the world that you've absorbed. And you're not the only one. There are millions of men. When men work with me, their number one fear is that they feel they're so terrified to be viewed as weak or vulnerable or needy. And so that, therefore, a lot of the posturing and the hiding of emotions. Men tend to default to, if I don't know what I'm feeling and I don't know where to go with it, I just won't say anything and I'll pull away. And what you're doing is actually very courageous. But I'd ask you to rethink that before you attach this thing of vulnerable to basic communication. Because what you're actually doing is problem solving. A problem's come up. If you put this on a different template, if you thought that this were your work, and you could see an interaction, something's come up and you have a commentary for your partner about the company or about a podcast that you're doing or the content, or you want to talk about this thing with a guest, you wouldn't second guess yourself and you wouldn't feel vulnerable in communicating this information.
Yeah, but again, I think all of us are built with our background, our experience, our exposure to relationships. And I think, you know, the way that people communicate to me as a coach, like I'm a coach, I coach a lot of people, you're a coach. The way that people communicate this stuff to me, the word that they use a lot of the time is vulnerability.
I know that
they are scared. And I get that being direct and honest with information is absolutely key. But a lot of the time, it's not a case of being direct and honest. It's being able to open your mouth at all and just say something.
Yeah, because we're scared of the response. You see, so we're thinking ahead of ourselves. If you make it smaller, take smaller steps. The first step is to be able to tell your partner what you're feeling, because they're going to feel it anyway. So you're not hiding anything. You're actually averting a problem. So if you think of it in smaller steps, okay, first my goal is to say it. Then I will watch their response and trust myself that I can handle it. And whatever they say next, I will be able to adapt and flow with it. You've got to trust that you can improvise and know the next move. People are afraid to say something initially because they're afraid of what the response is going to be on the other end. That's how it tends to occur.
So when we've got a couple, and we talked about this kind of explosive conversation that can often ensue with being in a relationship, when we see this, and arguments explode, do we draw a conclusion that these couples are not almost right for each other? Or do they not have the exposure and skill set yet, or the awareness to actually do that in almost an adult way?
I think it's the latter.
Okay.
Because I think what happens is there are some couples that you would never want the relationship they have. They fight all the time, but they're going to stay together 25 or 30 years because that's their thing. Mm. It's where they're at in their level of communication. But at the end of the day, even with their bickering and slamming doors and reactivity, they come back together. Our job, I see, as an individual, is to continue to evolve into the best version of ourselves on all levels. And when you're in partnership, you want to take your partner with you on that journey. You want to keep showing up as the better version of yourself to engage the better version of them. So every time you choose not to be reactive and you choose, Ben, to simply say, this is what I'm feeling, you're already setting the stage for the response of your partner to be as equally measured and adult as what you have handed out. So it's a volley. They're going to mirror you, you know? Mm. And so generally, that's it. You've chosen a higher version of communication.
So I think, I mean, there's probably a bit of 50-50, right? There's going to be some people that do not have the skill set and the awareness to approach this and do this in the right way. And there's going to be some people that just aren't right for each other. And
exactly.
I've had experience of people writing into the podcast after, you know, listening for a while. And they've said, do you know what? The podcast and me getting into fitness and sort of changing myself realized that me and my partner weren't right for each other, and we kind of went our separate ways. What does being in a relationship that's not right feel like?
Oh, boy, they're all different versions. You feel like you're walking on eggshells, and maybe I'm talking as a woman. I've picked difficult partners. I'll admit it. God, I don't know. I think I want to create challenges for myself, but oftentimes I've noticed that, you know, whether it was moodiness or, well, years ago, my guy was, you know, obviously he was a pro bodybuilder, he was on steroids, so of course he was in a bad, foul mood half the time, dieting the other half. So even natural bodybuilders cranky from their diet when they're completely drug-free. So you've got a lot of reactivity that they've got that as a partner I've been tiptoeing around. And the better version of that is, the healthier version is that you pick somebody that even when they're having a rough time, somehow you both know how to diffuse it. You know, you don't add to the fire. You don't ignite it. And a healthy relationship is your partner's going to have some bad days. They're going to be cranky. Some days they're going to be bitchy. It's just the way it is. It's when, if that feels like a warning sign to us and we start to recoil, or we find ourselves in fear of them, or we find ourselves constantly trying to placate their emotions, that's not healthy.
So when we've got two people that are maybe different, so let's say we've got two people that are a little bit inactive, you know, they haven't been looking after themselves for a while, they've been in a relationship 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and one of them starts to get into the gym, one of them is trying to get fit, is really doing the right thing, he or she, and as this is evolving, there's friction. And this other person isn't appreciating the person that they're starting to become. And we can discuss the reasons why. What needs to happen? What does that person that is trying to make the change need to do to kind of get the investment from their partner in something that really means something to them?
You have to say to your partner, if you're the one who's taking your fitness seriously, you have to say to your partner, this is for us. I want to look better for you. Don't think I'm out here looking better for somebody else, because that's your partner's fear. Your partner's fear when you look good and start to evolve into having a healthy external life with hobbies is that somehow they're thinking, oh, and you're going to be better and more attractive, and then you're going to want to leave me. Mm-hmm. So this is a very common problem that you've spoken about, and what we're really talking about is growth. One partner has chosen to evolve, mm-hmm. to better themselves, and the other hasn't. You're talking about fitness. We could just as easily be talking about career.
Yep.
You know, but it's the point is that in a relationship, one partner will grow a little bit ahead. The other one should be activated and incentivized. So I'd say if your partner's starting to give you resistance, the first thing to do is to know they're frightened that you're going to look good and leave them. You have to say, baby, it's not for you, or honey, it's not for you. It's not to leave you. It is for you. It is my looking good makes me feel good. I want us to be healthy. I want us to live a long life together. You've got to reassure them. And then, you know, getting them into the gym or getting them healthy or getting them to change their eating habits, sometimes they'll resist just because they, you know, they're feeling threatened. They want to resist. But you stop the fridge with healthy foods, you know, get them to go to the gym with you.
So, I mean, so we'll smallen the gap. Let's say this couple have got, like, let's say they're both put on 2 stone. They've been together a while, they've both put on 2 stone, which isn't a huge amount of weight.
Right.
And this first person is, like, 1 stone into their weight loss. They've got another stone to go. And this other person has not really had that emotion to really change. They don't see their weight loss as a big problem yet. And again, you've highlighted the first problem, that they're going to look sexier, they're going to look better. You've told them that, but they don't quite feel it. They don't buy into it. They're not really, like, driven enough to go to the gym. What kind of almost strategies can that first person then start to really use? Because now we almost need to be a little bit strategic about our approach to really get the buy-in and get them to see and feel what we're experiencing.
Good point. They may not want to go to the gym. That may be too obvious and too direct, because that's strictly for, you know, fitness, for looking attractive, right? I would engage them in a hobby. On the weekends when you're with your partner, say, let's go for a walk. It's beautiful out. Engage them in something fun. You want to play table tennis. Let's go play tennis. Let's go hit a bucket of balls. You want to take a jog with me. It's so gorgeous out. Start to include your partner in hobbies or fitness where they find it interesting and exciting. They'll think it's a date with them. You're getting them moving. Mm-hmm. And what happens is sometimes once we just get that gear unstuck, the person gets on, they'll start to feel better. They're like, oh, that was fun. You want to go for a walk again next week? That's what we're hoping for.
So I suppose it's about rechanneling the kind of emotional outcome and experience, because, you know, previously you might have gone out for a meal, eaten two courses, had three drinks, and the response of that was you had fun, you had a laugh, you enjoyed yourself. But equally, you could go out and have a long walk with your dog and stop for, you know, just a meal, a single plate of meal at a pub, and then walk home and equally have the same response.
Yes, yes. You can pre-program your partner to view that as a romantic, close experience. Maybe up the romanticism. Maybe stop your partner on your walk and pull them aside and have a passionate kiss and say, this feels so good. We're outdoors. It's healthy. I love you. You know, somehow give them the reward. Give them the cookie. It's an emotional cookie. And the more that we show our partner what we want by throwing them the positive cookie for that behavior that is good for both of us, then we teach them that this is another format in which we can express our feelings and our closeness together.
I think what's nice about this conversation is we're starting to expand the kind of emotional and practical side of being in a relationship, which takes work. Like, anyone that doesn't say a relationship doesn't take work, it just happens, it's natural, it's just bullshit.
You're right.
It does take work. And I think one of the things that I've always tried to get people to do is really look after themselves and sleep well and be energized and not exercise to the point that you're always feeling tired. Because you mentioned, like, your cranky bodybuilder ex-boyfriend. Now, to me, he was in a lifestyle that potentially in some ways negatively affected your relationship because, you know, in the times that he made available to you, he wasn't at his best self.
No, and, you know, that's part of the lifestyle. That's another decision. If you are with an athlete that is their goal in life, you may not be number one. You may not be a priority. So you have to figure out how important that is to you. There were other problems in that relationship that didn't stimulate me that had nothing to do with that. Had he been the right disposition, I'm a very independent person. I went off and did my own work. It's not, you know, but you learn to understand. You know, your partner certainly has been grumpy at certain times. You know, not aggravate them. You go away, you do something else. You come back, they come over, give you a kiss. It's all better. It's the entire dispositional makeup. You know, I think disposition is a very important quality that's oftentimes overlooked in relationships. Does your disposition work well with your partner? Mm-hmm. You know, do you tend to be conflict resolution oriented, both of you? Does your partner tend to diffuse you rather than ignite you? Does your partner tend to be a positive person? Mm-hmm. You know, they can be an introvert, but they're still positive. You know, do they edify what's good and wonderful that you respect and admire in yourself? These are important questions.
So with these kind of like honest conversations that couples need to have, do you think there's a right time? Do you think it's a case that whenever you feel this emotion and you want to be honest and verbal, you just verbalize it or you just kind of bank it, try and read their body language and see if they are kind of in a good and happy place to be able to kind of almost take potential, because initially they might see it as negativity.
This is big. This is an individual discussion. You have to be cued into your partner. If for some reason or other you feel that anything you have to say to your partner is going to be volatile and they're going to be reactive, you certainly have to get the best timing possible. Okay. If it's something that is a really big issue and it can't wait, you've just got to say it. Okay, but I think we all naturally modify when and how we say something because we're constantly reading our partner's energy and their attitude. I think your natural intuition of what you know with this partner is going to temper however you speak and when you speak to them.
Mm. One thing I found, and it's not just in relationships, I found this doing like business meetings and just generally chatting, is having these kind of conversations while out walking. Because to me, it just feels like it changes the dynamic. It sort of relaxes the body. There's environmental stimulus that you're kind of appreciating and feeling. And also, there's nowhere to get away. You can't be defensive because you might be on a half an hour walk and you're only 10 minutes in.
I love it. That's brilliant. That's a perfect prescription. That's how I used to make myself run greater distance. I'd run so far that I knew, I run to the point that I knew I had to run back, otherwise I'd get cold and sweaty and I'd get sick. So, but that's a perfect idea. I think the idea of walking and forward movement adds, it's like a subtle psychology. It adds the feeling of moving through the situation and problem as well. Mm. I think that's brilliant, Ben. Love it.
I just think back to where me and my girlfriend have had the most positive conversations, and they have been walking. Like, we'll go out for a long 2-hour walk and we'll go through so much stuff and we'll talk honestly and be open and, you know, be objective and talk about our goals. And it's a really nice experience.
You have struck on a truth that works for you. Mm. And I think it can work for anybody. And I think that, first of all, I commend you on your unbelievable, astute observational skills. You're very bright. It's very exciting to see people put all the pieces together, especially people in a leadership role like yourself with a podcast. You know, you've really watched what works and what doesn't work, and you've gotten very refined on not only does it work like this, but it works best in this environment. Mm. These are things that, you know, when we're self-aware, when we're trying to improve ourselves in any way, we become keenly aware of these little nuances. Mm. And we're constantly amending to the better and better and better and finer decisions.
So I think we should probably wrap part of this conversation up in almost kind of like some other hacks, I suppose. I'll talk from my experience again, and then I'll ask you about your experience. I think one of the other things that I've seen positively in my relationship is being able to forward plan as much as possible, especially as I'm self-employed. So, you know, I might go away for a week and I'll say to my girlfriend, like, when I come home, the next 3 days, like, what are you doing? Where are you? Okay. And then I can say to myself, right, that afternoon, that's for you. And that evening, that's for you. And then I just know everything that's coming and I can say, right, phone's off, I'm yours. And then nothing interferes and it allows me to live my life in my way around that. I think that's one of the things that we've really nailed, like, the last 6 months in our relationship.
Oh my God, I've got to clone you. Where are you? Why are you not in New York? You're the perfect man. Oh my gosh, this is incredible. No, look at what you've done. You've intuitively figured out that it's a bank. Okay, it's like a gas tank. All right, let me make it this way. All of us have an emotional gas tank. None of us are good at running close to empty. None of us. And when you know that that tank has gone down because you've been away for a week, you're smart enough to know, my life is going to go a lot better with my gal, and I'm going to be a lot happier if I refill the tank. You give her dedicated time. This is like what you're doing to turn off the phone and pay attention to her. I mean, I see people that don't even watch for the cabs on the street. Their head is down. They're at dinner. They're not even looking at each other. You're giving this woman quality time, so you've trained your partner, whether you know it or not, you've trained your partner to allow you to go away with no complaint, because when you come back, you've made a promise, and it's been concrete, and it's in action. You've shown her that when I come back, I make up for the time away, and I want to be with you, and I want to enjoy you. This is brilliant. So you're perfect.
What? A lot of people, and yeah, I don't know how I did this. Like, on reflection, I'm not really sure how I kind of circumnavigated this. But earlier on in my relationship, it wasn't as easy in the, like, my partner didn't appreciate the time that couples have apart. And there's almost like man goes to work or girlfriend goes to work. They come home. Right, you're not doing anything. Spend it with me. Yeah. Why are you going out with the boys? Spend it with me. Why are you going to the gym? Spend it with me. How does someone work around that when someone doesn't realize the time that people need by themselves?
This is a really good question. It tends to be the domain of men, but now more modern women are feeling that way as well because they work just as hard. So the person who complains the most, who's insecure by you going away, either feels that their tank is too low and you haven't given them quality time that you can afford to now give time to your buddies, all right? Or they are so inherently insecure that no matter what quality time you give to them, it's never enough. I have a friend who's a pilot, good guy, buddy. We used to date years ago, okay? He kept telling me, Susan, I can't find a girl that can put up with my schedule because I can be gone 17 days out of the month. But when he's home, he's completely about her. I said, you're the perfect guy. I love a guy. Go away. Come back. I can work on my stuff. And you trust him because he's faithful. That's another thing. Your partner trusts you. If you want to go away with the buddies, you have to ask yourself a question. Have I given my partner any reason to fear me going out with the guys? Have I made my boyfriend too uncomfortable that me going out with Jill and Sally, because Jill's a little wild and single, that we're going to get into some kind of trouble and that should threaten him? So time with friends it can be healthy, or time with friends can be, he's not paying attention to me, she's not paying attention to me, he or she is going out and maybe going to get into trouble. So we just have to backtrack on where are we with our partner? What is our partner's problem with us going out?
So I get banking time is fantastic. We've kind of like, that's really important. What if, you know, you've got a partner and they are insecure? Is it, you know, because there could be action that the man will take to make the partner feel insecure by behavior and patterns and history. What if it is genuinely the other person? The other person has had maybe a string of partners that have been unfaithful, and they are inherently going to feel that this person is going to do the same, and they just can't get over that.
That's a challenge.
Yeah, could I be the person to help? Do they need external help? Is it a case of just time?
When people tend to see ghosts, they tend to see ghosts of their past. I don't know. It has to be something they're willing to fix. You're telling me that if the person who wants to go out and they are in no way a person who has incited insecurity and they didn't cheat, can you be the one to correct this person from their insecure past? No. Your partner, who's insecure, has to take it upon themselves to admit that the problem exists within them and that they're looking for their history in your present and that that can't be done. I'd like to say all your good deeds will fix your partner, but they may not.
Mm. Mm. And that's tough. It's quite painful to see that in someone else.
You can ask your partner to go to therapy. Say, if you want, I'll go with you. But this one isn't my problem. This one's your problem, and I'm willing to work with you on it, but I've got to see that you're making progress because I have to be free to have a life. Mm. I can't be tethered to you, and every time I want to go out, I can't have you freaking out thinking I'm going to do something just because everybody else has, because you're going to make me crazy. Mm. Then you're going to make me want to leave, and I don't want to leave. Mm. And I've seen some guys, so the guy who's the pilot, right? He's got a very insecure girlfriend, and she used to punish him for going away. That's his livelihood. That's what buys her dinners. That's what fixes her teeth when she's got a cavity. He's very generous, but you can't go back and yell at him for making a living, right? Because you're the recipient of some of that good stuff. And he just had to slap her back and say, I'm not having this. I love you, but I am not having this. Mm. And when he tried and tried, and she was just, you know, she wanted to rip up all the pictures of his former wife. You can't. These are pictures from 20 years ago. You have no right to do this. Mm. So these individuals have to work on their own insecurity, or they will ruin the very relationship that they're seeking to maintain. Mm.
Interesting. It's like anything on this podcast. You have to go and be willing to go in on yourself and improve yourself to be the best version of yourself, to be the best version to someone else. I say to people, you've got to be able to love and appreciate yourself before you can give that to someone else.
Ben, you're right. And you are handling your relationship, from what I hear, absolutely brilliantly. You've got real, concrete, actionable steps that you've learned to give back to your partner so that she always feels valued. This is incredible. This is beautiful.
And I think half of this is me being in tune with her and listening to the signals that she's telling me and just responding appropriately. Like, you know, the way that she does something will give me a direct indication of how I should perform that action with her around.
Well, you're paying attention.
Yeah.
That's what most guys don't. They don't do. I don't mean, because I love men and I want to state that. And so people worry that I don't want anybody, any one of your listeners to misconstrue this. But oftentimes men and women don't pay attention to their partner's emotional cues. And if the partner isn't good enough to communicate, hey, I'm feeling this or that, that's when you get into a bundle of troubles. Mm. Because people aren't paying attention, reactions are being had, people are afraid to say that hurt me, nobody knows where they stand in the relationship. You've also set a template for honest communication, so that if you missed if you missed some kind of symbol or sign that your partner had, you just missed it because you were preoccupied or busy or editing or doing something, your partner knows they have the comfort to come and confront you and say, hey, I'm feeling this way. So when you speak up about your feelings, you're giving your partner the same permission to do that thing as well. See, that's the good system that you've already established.
Mm. Yeah, I remember there was a point in our relationship that I said to her, I said, however painful it might be to me, I want you to say what you feel as soon as you feel it, because, you know, I'm and be aware that I might be annoyed, I might be upset. That's going to be a natural reaction of me,
yeah.
But that doesn't give you cause not to be honest, because you're not protecting my relation, my emotions. You've got to protect your emotions, and I have to deal with mine in my own way and be, again, adult about it.
I do a lot of preliminary discussions before I ever hit the sheets with a partner. I have to be honest with you. I talk all these things through, and I do disclaimers similar to this. I will say things like, my goal is to love. My goal is to fall in love with you. If you have any problem with a woman loving you, you should bail now. My preference would be that you feel the same way about me, but for God's sake, don't edit my emotions and don't peel me back just because you're uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they normally start crying. I mean, a big guy will start crying. But I have to tell people how I function, and you're telling your partner how you function, and I have to create early on. I do a similar conversation like, what's really important is there'll be times that we have challenges, and there'll be times that you've got something you're hiding from me. Because you've learned in the past that if I say this thing, anybody's going to go crazy. And I'm going to promise you right here and now, I may not like it, I may not do the best with it, but you remind me of this conversation because you've got to be able to tell me the stuff that you think is ugly or that I don't want to hear. If it's not open on the table, we're going to start lies and we're going to start covering up, because most people are afraid to show who they really are. I've learned that to love a man, one of the ways I show a man that I love him is to let him be all that he is and tell me the truth of what he's about. It's that he normally hides who he is from a woman and only shows her what he thinks are the appropriate things she wants to see. I may not like hearing this stuff. I may not like seeing it. But if I'm going to love him, I got to know that.
Mm.
And then the love that he feels for me, knowing that I know all of him and I'm okay with that, you know, you have to be open with your partner. We hide so much of who we are. Men hide certain pornography. They hide certain proclivities that they want in bed. And they're so terrified that if I tell her or show her, she'll be freaked out about it. And if you have to play a game of who you are with your partner, you're underestimating your partner, or two, you've got the wrong partner.
Mm. And, of course, that's always a reality people have to face. You know, how many relationships have you been in? How many relationships have I been in? You know, we don't get one relationship and it sticks. Like, we need to know and be attuned to when something is realistically not going to work out, however painful that is.
It is true. And you've given your partner permission to be honest. And you've stated, I might not like it, but we need to talk about it. And you've also given them, in that statement, you gave them the promise, just like I do, that for whatever reason, it's more important that you say this. I might not like it, but remember this conversation. I gave you my word. You can recall. You can tell me again. Hey, you said I'm safe to do this. You'll say, yeah, I got to go with that. Mm. That's my promise to you. Mm. That's brilliant.
Well, this show was half selfish on my behalf and half for the listeners, I will be honest, because, you know, everything about this podcast has been about, you know, self-optimization, improving what we get out of life. And if we're honest, like, relationships or the relationship is one of the biggest aspects of your life. Like, you know, your safety and your well-being, your career, your relationship, they're like the key three things that are going on. So for us to really get this far into the podcast and not talk about it, it's a bit sacrilege.
Who you choose as a partner defines your career. It defines your success. It defines your level of risk. It defines your level of comfort. It also defines your level of trust in what you can do, and most times how you feel about yourself, because that's the mirror that reflects back to you who you are.
Mm.
So if you're an ambitious person, you need to have somebody that supports and honors that.
Mm.
They may not be ambitious in the way that you are. They may have an entirely different career, but they have to honor it and support it. Really honor it and support it. And you have to feel that that's honored and supported.
That's quite hard sometimes.
Yeah,
You know, because my partner's ambitious. Like, she was one of the youngest ever nurses in her speciality field, like loads of stuff. But her ambition is different to mine, and it's probably driven from a different place. And sometimes, and I think we all do, we kind of look at someone else and go, well, why don't you do it my way? And it's like, well, that person isn't you. It's as simple as that. But just, you know, and I'm being self-aware, but just battling that emotion is quite oftentimes tough.
They may express their ambition in a different way. You might have a partner who's an artist, and they'll go and work for a day and a half on a painting, or they want to do a theatrical piece, or they're a dancer. And you may be upwardly mobile in business and not understand, you know, what they're doing. But some people do it for the love of it. Some people do it because they have to do it. Some people do it because they need to see concrete examples of their traction in life. They need to see it through money and position. And there's not one right way. This is where disposition and how we express ourselves is so important. You will know when you're in a relationship if you can go through the different evolutions of who you are and you and your partner continue to find your way back together again. There will be times you're a little bit apart. There will be times one grows and the other doesn't. But the point is, it eventually comes back. It goes apart and it comes back. It's like the DNA strand, okay? That's what happens in a healthy relationship, and it keeps moving. And hopefully our partner challenges us. It challenges us not in a negative way, but in a positive way, that they've got the kind of energy and disposition that keep us on track to want to be our better self. What you want to watch out for is a person that dampens you, dampens your drive, dampens your spirit, asks you to want less of life. Mm. That's a person that just wants to, I'm tired now, let's just sit down here. We're going to stop, right? This is done. Can we stop? And if you're a partner that wants growth, you're going to want to keep moving forward.
Mm. Yes, it's a big topic, growth, being in a growth mindset and not. It's difficult. I think what got me thinking about this was I was listening to Tom Bilyeu, who's he used to be the CEO of Quest Nutrition. I was listening to his podcast, and he did a podcast with his wife. And
wow.
They just laid it all out on the table and said, like, this is how our relationship has evolved. This is how I feel. This is how we've worked through our problems. And it was so honest and raw. But he talked about the fact that he was in a relentless growth mindset in his life, and his partner wasn't. And it was about her finding her own place in a growth mindset, albeit it wasn't the same as his.
Yes.
But she started to find her way, but it will never be what his is, because her purpose is different.
That's a great distinction, because your partner may rail at and resist thinking they have to be a little you. Your partner may never want to go to the gym. Okay, that maybe I don't do that. But your partner may discover they love yoga, you know, or they want to be horseback riding. So it doesn't have to be your kind of ambition. And that's a really key point. I'm really glad that you brought that up. And that's a great example. So that's another point that's very good.
Mm. Susan, we better wrap this up. We've been talking for some time. I also don't want to, for me in a podcast, I always want to feel where there's like an organic, like there's a natural end to the show, and people have like something to almost go away and sort of think about. And I think that time is now. Susan, if people want to find out more about your work, they want to follow your advice, they maybe want to explore this kind of thought process of improving their relationship, where can they go?
I'm susanwinter.net. That's my website. It's got all my consultation packages, all my interviews. Our interview will be on there as well. And check out my videos. I started doing videos about a year and a half ago. It's Susan E. Winter. But honestly, if you put the name Susan Winter in your search engine, you'll find me. I'm the first one that comes up. And just a quick message to your listeners. If you factor growth into your relationship from the beginning, you'll continue to grow. That's something we didn't do in traditional relationships. We looked at stasis. We looked at comfort and security and sameness, and that's what destroyed traditional relationships. Because human beings, to grow, you will have discomfort and risk. So allow your relationship to grow from the very beginning. Allow your partner to become the best they're doing. Support what they're exploring. Have them then support what you're exploring. Allow yourselves to do the back and forth, the up and the I'm doing it with my hands, which your listeners will be able to see it. So I'm making the DNA strand. So allow your partner to grow and encourage them so that they will have the reciprocity with you. If you factor growth into the relationship from the beginning, you'll have it throughout the end, and you'll have a growth-oriented relationship that can sustain both of you.
I love that. We all need to grow. That's why this podcast exists. It's personal improvement. It's growth. So I'm going to summarize quickly before we go, because I think it's important. Open communication, however uncomfortable it feels, is really important. Listen to the cues of your partner and feed off their energy. Maybe have conversations that are a little bit more dynamic. They're not kind of like on the sofa where it feels kind of almost a bit confrontational. Maybe go for a walk. Maybe you're out and about. Maybe you're kind of driving. We've talked about listening. Allow your partner to grow. So I suppose, Susan, I suppose a lot of that is just in the language of how you kind of explore what it is you both want out of your relationship.
Absolutely. And another point that you brought up yourself, refill their tank. Teach your partner it's okay that you go away and do your gym. It's okay that you, I don't know, went to a class this weekend about health and nutrition and they didn't want to go. When you come back, reward your partner by filling their tank as you do with attention so that they learn that you going away, it's almost like puppy training. I'm going to go away. Bye-bye. I'll be back. You don't want your partner to think that when you go away to learn and grow that you don't want to come back. So that solidifies it's okay for us to do this. We come back together at the end. I think that's brilliant on your part.
Awesome. Susan, amazing. You heard everyone go to susanwinter.net. Google machine her, put her name into the social machine, find out some more. I just genuinely think that relationship is such a big part of our life and we really need to explore it. We really need to optimize it because, you know, love shouldn't have friction. It should now and again, but, you know, it should support us. It should ignite us. It should make us happy. It should empower us and, you know, just enable us to live our best life, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right, everyone. Thank you for listening in. Susan, thanks for being an amazing guest on the show. It's been great to speak to you. And
look, you're an amazing host. Come on, you're easy.
Well, I'm not easy. Behave. I will be back on the show next week with another incredible guest as standard. In the meantime, all of you beautiful lot, stay awesome, and I will see you next week. Goodbye.
Whoa, hang on a second before you go. Remember that if you want loads of health and fitness and juicy information about nutrition, the science of nutrition and training and health and all that kind of juicy stuff, then go to bodytypenutrition.co.uk where you can get loads of information. You can read our blog. You can look at our online nutrition courses. You can get loads of cool information there. You can also have a look at all the books that I've written. And also, if you want some clarity in the world of supplementation, please go to awesomesupplements.co.uk, the place where supplements work. We have none of the bullshit around supplements. They taste incredible, and we're here to help you as much as possible get clarity on what supplements you need and what you don't need. Now, go and enjoy your day. Be awesome.